Ken Ferry, welcome to the show.
Gone now? Okay.
we'll fix it somehow.
Okay.
You're no dummy.
Thanks. You too, guy.
Hey, thanks. I'll see you today. Do you want to give us sort of a brief history of sort of how you got into this field?
So first, maybe since probably almost nobody knows who I am at all, the reason why Guy and Renee might want to talk to me is that I worked at Apple for 7.5 years on Cocoa for most of the time, where auto layout was my biggest project. And then I worked on Passbook for a while, and now I'm doing a new app called Understudy, which I'm probably will talk about later, but you know, maybe not right now.
You forgot NS Image.
I did own. That's true. I did own NS
Image. That's a big one.
I did. Well, yeah. I also had the whole sell and control hierarchy. So there's lots of stuff. At some point, I had 13% of AppKit. I had to calculate at some point. So
I love how you know that number so exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I had to get it at some point because I was going to put it on my resume. So you know.
All right. So
I don't remember if that's by line of codes or by classes, though. I didn't know. Anyway.
But, you know, how'd you start out?
Way back when I had a Commodore 64, which I'm sure you guys often hear. I don't know if that really counts as when I started out, though, because, I mean, that was fun, but I feel like it didn't really stick all that well.
Did you program on it, or did you just,
I did. Like, no, I mean, you can't do anything on a Commodore 64 other than program it, I don't think.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I did. I had one of these books that has programs in it with a spiral-bound, you know, binding. Yeah. And you flip through it and type them all in, and then you save them to your. I had the tape drive, so that took forever. but you know, and that was I did like it. Actually, the thing I most remember from that is actually I did have a couple games. I had Rocky's Boots was really amazing. Do you know that game?
No, not at all. Rocky's Boots.
Yeah, it's actually super interesting. It's this game which is really doing like programming with and OR gates, but they don't present it that way. You know, they present it as solving puzzles.
Okay.
It's actually something I find really interesting about that is that you, it's like a typical old Atari game, you know, like you are the cursor, you know what I mean? Like you're this square. Yeah. And it's really interesting, like how you identify that with that cursor and that becomes you as opposed to, you know, when I'm using, you know, Photoshop or whatever, like I don't think of myself as the mouse.
As the mouse, right. Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of interesting. And we've sort of lost that a little bit, though not so much, you know, in games you still have it sometimes.
Anyway, sure. So how does the game work?
You've just got these, I mean, I don't totally remember all that well, but you've got these tasks you have to accomplish and you've got this sort of like, and then in each room, there's a task to accomplish. And then there's also these sort of gates lying around, these things that are effectively AND gates or gates that you place, you know, in the room in various places. And then you wire them together to try to accomplish the task. And that's how it works. And so it's building digital circuits. It doesn't tell you that it's doing that. So, as you go through, you'll get more and more different components that you can fit together, like delays and all sorts of things.
So was that your first sort of introduction to, you know, how programming works and like the, you know,
definitely. Since I was like, I was probably six. So yeah, nothing before then. that was my introduction. But like I said, I don't feel like that. I mean, I'm sure that had an effect on my like, you know, overall psyche, but that didn't.
Right.
That didn't stick, you know, like I didn't keep doing that forever.
Yeah, but it ruined you enough that, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it probably also doesn't hurt that my dad's a math professor, you know.
So, oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And we also – and he had – he actually did some programming for the Osborne.
Nice. Had one of those.
Yeah. And he was – I'm not even told – I should ask him what he was doing. I think he was writing like LaTeX packages or something. So for that's the Osborne, cool. Did you even know there was LaTeX for the Osborne? I think there was.
I had no idea if it got ported or not.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And that was a fun my understanding is that's kind of a fun computer. Like on that one, there's no protected memory. So like if you screw up wrong, one of the things that can happen is that the computer can start screeching because you overwrote the memory
for the driving audio the speaker. Thing.
Yeah. So
okay. So computers suck.
Yeah, well, sure. Right. Maybe suck less. I haven't ever made a Mac do that too bad. Actually, I have.
I'm sure you could.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure I have.
Do it. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so there was that. Probably the next like major hit like that was in high school. I had a TI-85 graphing calculator.
Reverse Polish notation.
No, those are the HP ones.
Really? Wait, yes. So the TI didn't do that?
Nope, the TI was normal notation. That was the big divide. So were you an HP person or
TI person? I don't like you as much.
See, well, you're an HP. Anyway, so I did a little bit of the, you know, I did some basic programming on that, and then I actually got one of those. They had this cable you could buy to hook your calculator to your computer, and if you did that, then you could upload programs to it that you perhaps downloaded from the internet, and it also meant you could program in assembly, which you couldn't otherwise do.
Against the MIPS chip? I guess it's MIPS.
It was a Z80, I think.
Okay.
So I actually didn't. So the first part of that is like I kind of became like sort of the dealer kind of for my high school because I was the person who had that hookup, so I could grab. I would like distribute. I'd put games on my calculator, and then they'd get copied to the other calculators. And the assembly games are like that compared to a basic game is just there's no comparison. They're way better. Yeah.
You know, the real dealer in your high school is now legal in Colorado and Washington State. So
the what? Sorry,
the real dealer.
The dealer? Sorry. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. So.
Bad career choice, but fine.
Yeah.
So where'd you go from there?
I think I sort of tried to do a little bit of assembly programming, but that didn't really take off either. In college, I did take some programming courses. I was a math major in college, but I came awful close to a double major in CS and mathematics. If I had realized how close I was, I probably would have finished the CS.
What's your first love? Is it mathematics? Like if you had to choose one or the other,
I would say the computers and programming for sure. It's not so much, but like, it's more like I just didn't have a love until I figured out that I liked this stuff. It just took a long time. I mean, actually something I really liked, there was I wish I remember the exact quote, but there's something pretty, you know how people always tell you like do what you love or chase the thing that that you really like. There's a really great quote about how that's kind of reversed. Oftentimes it's the passion follows the depth. Like how can you have passion about something you don't understand?
Yeah. You know?
So, and I think that was definitely true for me. Like it's not like you could just show me a computer and then I was like, oh my God, a computer. It took a while.
No, I think a lot of times, that kind of, so yeah, passion and depth and weird desire to just chase something comes from, exploration.
Yeah,
like finding something new and sort of just
going
deeper than you ever think you should.
I always was certainly interested in. I was always interested in computers. I always kind of wanted to do that, but it didn't really like take hold until I would say after college. It really took hold when I was teaching myself. So I graduated college, and I was pretty sure at that point I didn't want to do math. But I didn't know what I did want to do. Which was, pretty hard. I don't know if you guys had that kind of thing. Did you do that as well?
No, I've had an easy life. I did history and anthropology in college.
Okay, cool.
And I was like, well, now I want a job. And I'd been programming for years and years and years.
Okay.
So that's kind of what I decided to do. But it sounds like you had a real moment of a big decision to make, right?
By moment we mean a couple of years, but yeah.
It was instantaneous. I mean, like a reckoning.
It was a hard couple of years. So after college, I think I was trying to figure out what I was going to do since my problem with the math was that, I very much respect the people who do that, but for me, it's a little bit too removed. Like, it's not clear. It's not visceral enough to me what good that's doing for the world, you know, why anybody should care. So basically, like in 2003 or 2004, I was teaching myself COCO programming, because I was trying to do something or other, and that really took hold. So like when I was looking at like delegation and notification, I remember those as just being like, that was an interface builder. That kind of stuff was just like an epiphany. It was just like, oh my goodness, this is so much better. This is like, these are so many good ideas in this stuff that's really interesting. And messaging versus implementations, all that stuff. I really loved it. And it was also interesting because, you know, one of the things was, I did do a little bit of GUI programming in college. In second semester CS, we did, it was C++ and Lisp and Java, and we did a calculator in Java. Okay. In Swing. Yeah.
Swing. Really?
Yeah.
Are you still angry about that?
Well, maybe a little bit, because what happened was, you know, I was really excited about it. I was really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And then programming this thing did not turn out to be anything like what I expected. It was just monotonous. And then later, you know, when I was looking at this COCO stuff, well, I mean, doing a calculator in COCO is what I expected it to be like in Java. It was, you know, you drag out, you have your calculator, you have your buttons, and then all the code you write has to do with the, you know, semantics of what you want to have happen, not fiddling with the UI, if that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. So that was what really, so that was the point it really, really grabbed me. So what I was doing at the time is I was actually going to math graduate school but it was always known to be terminal. Like, I was getting a master's because I just kind of didn't want to do nothing. but meanwhile, I was doing this other stuff, and I wrote an iPhoto plugin that was fairly popular at the time, but I don't know if you would have run across. It's called Keyword Assistant. It lets you do kind of like what Flickr does, or Facebook tagging. You know, it was like tagging before tagging was really quite a thing. And it made it easy to say who's in your photographs, because it would autocomplete from your address book in very smart ways. And then I would turn that into a website that had all the photos like cross-referenced by people. Though I never actually shipped that part of it. I just shipped the iPhoto plugin. So I was doing that, and I was running some other classes. And I was, you know, coming around to the idea that this is what I really wanted to do. It was pretty hard though, because I'm from upstate New York. I'm from Binghamton. And there wasn't anybody, I just didn't know anybody else who was doing this stuff. In terms of being able to speak in person with somebody. So when I was applying, to Apple, but it was just like a black hole, you know,
right?
Like you throw your resume in and then nothing happens and you don't know what to do. I guess I'm just telling the story now. I guess that's what you do. I don't know.
You're the guest. You just
cut me off.
No, please.
Please. I don't want to be boring.
Nah, you're the boss.
So eventually after I was really like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I want to work. I feel like I really want to work on at Apple. I love this COCO stuff.
Right.
But I don't know anybody. I don't have any kind of connections. And this isn't working. So eventually, sort of as a last ditch, I paid my own way to go to WWDC, which was super expensive for me because it was $1,600 and I was there, and it was amazing because there were other people who like wanted to talk about the stuff that I was interested in, and that was great. Right.
What year is this?
This is 2005.
Yeah, I feel like we could have met up. But we didn't. So.
Who even knows, right? I mean, would we know? Probably not.
I don't know. You might have said hi. I did.
Yeah, I mean, we could have, but I wouldn't know if we had.
Right.
Yeah. But eventually I was like, all right, I don't know what to do. So after this talk, I'm just going to go up and like say something to the speaker, because otherwise this whole thing is like just not going to go anywhere. Right. And the speaker was George Warner, who was giving a talk about performance. And I don't know if you know George Warner, but he works in DTS, developer tech support, and he does mostly Carbon stuff, actually, or at least he did then. I don't know. So what happened was I went up and people were asking all these. It was a good talk, but it was generic performance or like threading and things like that, not really Cocoa centric. Mm-hmm. People were asking a lot of Cocoa questions and he didn't know the answers to them. And I started answering Cocoa questions. And by the end of this, he actually asked me, like, so what do you do? And I was like, well, nothing, right. You know? And so he took my resume and brought me out to Apple. And then actually when he did that, once I was coming out for an interview, he gave my resume to a couple other groups, one of which was Address Book and the other one was Cocoa. So I ended up interviewing with all of them. What's that?
So, Address, sorry, let's.
Something wrong?
Address Book is a group that works on Address Book, and Cocoa is a team that works on the frameworks. No, well, there's listeners out there.
Yeah.
I want to explain it a little bit. Yeah. No, your shorthand's fine. I just want to make sure that everybody's following.
All right. Yeah.
So you joined the Cocoa group.
I did. So there's part of the reason I'm telling this in this detail, though, is because there's something actually quite terrible here that I just skipped over and I'm going to go back to. So
you killed a man.
I killed a man. Actually, that used to be how somebody in the Cocoa group always introduced me. he'd say, "This is Candy. Once killed a man with his bare hands." The problem is that I was wrong in some of the stuff that I was saying up there, and I was super wrong, like really badly wrong, such that if George knew more about Cocoa, I would not have – this would not have happened. like in a really – you know how like on mailing lists sometimes people – like I really don't like this. They'll speak confidently but be wrong, and it's really dangerous because people who aren't as experienced can't tell the difference, and they react to the confidence.
Ken, that's the whole appeal of the show.
And the internet.
Well, okay, so I really, really, really try not to do that, okay?
Yeah.
But in this case, I was pretty sure. I thought I knew, you know?
Right.
The thing is, I was wrong. So, like, I can even be specific about it, and Guy, you're gonna be like, yeah, get out of here. so serious. The question was about, I told you this talk was partially about threading, right?
Right.
And someone asked, like, so what's the threading contract for NS Mutable Dictionary? Okay.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And I had somehow gotten it in my
head. Truck on the road and I this is awful. Okay.
So yeah, so I had somehow gotten it in my head. I thought that on the whole, Foundation was, quote, thread safe, and AppKit was not, okay?
Sure.
But as we all know now, thread safe is, like, not a good word, right? What you want to know is what
it's
is
horrible.
The threat model, not, you know, it's not even well-defined to say if something's thread safe. Anyway, I had in my head the Foundation was thread safe, so I was like, no, it's totally fine, just go nuts, right? And I remember somebody else behind me was just like, what? No, not what? And but apparently anyway, so I got hired because somebody didn't realize that I shouldn't have been hired.
Well, okay, so let's – it's a nerdy crew here. Go. Explain NS Dictionary threading.
You want me to explain that? All right.
No, why not? I mean, I'll help you out if you need. It's
okay. Hey, go ahead, man. You.
It's not thread safe.
Okay, so all right, fine. So the threading model for NS Mutable Dictionary, okay, as I said, it's not that things are thread safe or not. It's you have to understand how they're intended to be used.
Right. And like the reading, I think, works and the writing does not work.
Yeah, more basically. The deal is that you can use it in a thread-confined way. So if you have a dictionary, then you can work with it from any one thread, and it's totally fine. But if you're gonna, but you can't work with it from more than one context without locking access to it, without making sure that the access is prevented by a lock, or else is serialized. I don't know how to say this to people who don't know how to program.
It's okay. Don't worry about it.
And
if people don't know how to program, and they were listening to the show. We're here to help.
Well,
just say it confidently, Ken.
Actually, I'm pretty sure I can do this, but it would take me longer. Anyway, and as you say, Guy, if you're not modifying the dictionary, if you created a mutable dictionary and then fooled with it for a while and then didn't vend it out to your app at large until you had stopped messing with it, yes, then you can then you can access it from any thread and it's fine. But that's not the same thing as just go nuts. I mean, if you go nuts, you will you'll crash right away, which is actually good because the other possibility is you wouldn't crash; it just would miss your
Yeah, not crashing is almost the worst thing that can happen. Yeah.
In this case, I'm pretty sure you just crash pretty fast.
NS user defaults.
What about it?
Thread safety. Because I, you know, it's basically a dictionary, and I think people may want to.
Okay. Yeah. So you can that one is you can access that from any thread. It's right. It would just be too inconvenient if you couldn't. And so that's made safe. And the reason why it's not for NSMutable Dictionary is maybe twofold. So first of all, it would just cost so much in performance if they took such a primitive data structure and as a mutable dictionary and tried to make that safe to access for multiple threads. And then secondly, the number of cases where that would actually be sufficient to do what you wanted aren't that many. So you'd be paying this big cost for something that probably wasn't going to be adequate for your needs anyway.
Right. So NSMutable X, be it array or dictionary, don't mess with it on multiple threads. Keep it contained to the context. NSUser defaults, bit of a different game.
Yeah, totally. That's always.
Right. So, we've hopefully brought a little bit of good to the world.
now you've learned.
Well, with a bit of luck. So how'd you like working at Apple?
I mean, it was great. I mean, you can sort of get, you can see from what I just said, right? That like, I wasn't a super advanced programmer before I got there. And I just,
I don't believe you, but okay. No, I'll roll with it for the sake of the narrative, but no, I think you knew what you were
doing. No, I was pretty freaking scared. So actually I'll say one more thing about that interview. So when I said I interviewed for DTS and then Coco, and it was actually two full days of interviews. And after the first day, they sort of said like, look, all the groups are still interested in you, but you have to pick one because we can't, we need to do interviews with one group. We don't have time to do all of them. And I was pretty freaked because I just didn't think I could, I didn't think they were going to hire me for Coco. And I also didn't think I could do it. I was concerned that I couldn't do it. And also DTS, so that's developer tech support.
Yeah.
Okay. Which means that what you're doing is that when developers have problems, they send you their app and they say, this isn't what's working. Can you try to deal with it? And I actually thought that sounded pretty interesting because it meant you'd see a big cross section of all the things people are having trouble with. So,
I agree. It seems like a super interesting place to be.
So I was like,
DTS is kind of cool. It's one of the two membranes between Apple and the actual outside world.
Yeah,
there's evangelism, DTS, which I'm kind of – DTS and evangelism kind of wrapping up into one. And then PR, not a lot of communication coming out of that company, but DTS is one of those points.
No, though, as you know, there's like a bazillion – there's plenty of Apple people on Twitter, right? Like maybe I shouldn't put that out, but like they're kind of important.
So, do you know what? I mean, they mostly talk about their dogs and cats, so it's
that's true. Yeah. I mean, but they'll answer questions as long as it's not about unshipped stuff.
Yep.
So
yeah, that's the deep dark secret. Is like once something ships.
Yeah. Sure.
Right.
I actually always think so. I'm always like, I think that's so ridiculous. Every time somebody gets like a really interesting interview, like Jobs or like somebody, or whatever, or like Ali Ozer, who, not that he does, I've never seen an interview with Ali, but like if you get Ali in the room, don't ask him when the next iPhone's coming out. Like, A, he's not going to tell you. B, you're not even going to care in a year. Like,
no, right.
Who cares?
No.
It'll come out sometime.
I've literally been talking to people on the iOS device team, and they're over dinner, and they're like, "Do you know what? We're working on a new iPhone." Don't like, right? It's like, guess what? We're building a new one. It was like angry. Like, don't. He was talking about some leak that had happened around the time. Yeah. He's like, just the basics of like, guess what? We're not idiots. We're building a new iPhone.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Have you seen the balance sheet?
Right. You know what? Yeah. There's going to be a new OS X.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you shocked? I'm just like this vindictive, like, stop asking the dumb questions.
Guess what? Apple's already working on iOS 8. Who knew?
Right.
I don't know what you think they're doing.
It's the dumbest thing to be talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not interesting, right? So I always think it's funny when people – like, there's all this great stuff that, like, you – really interesting stuff you could ask Ali about, but not the features – honestly, the future is like not that interesting among things you could ask.
It rapidly becomes a past.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And there's a lot of like and also the future is more, you know, he's going to have a better viewpoint on the past too. Right. Like he's going to have more understanding of what happened.
I am firmly in the camp. And I think this show sort of speaks to that, is that I think that understanding the past helps you sort of understand the future.
Yeah.
Or at least understand the whatever the future is,
yeah,
it's not the be all and end all.
Like, I mean, it's clearly interesting, but you know, but also, sure. But it's also so uncertain, right? I mean, reason why Ali is not going to tell you about that stuff is because he doesn't really know yet, right?
Right.
He doesn't know how to talk about it, and he doesn't know, you know, he doesn't know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
so.
Every now and then I ask people, like, hey, what do you think the future is? And it's a dumb question. I kind of want to get their vague sketch and think people, you know, it's idiotic, and I feel bad all the time. But
I think there's interesting questions to be had there. I mean, I remember actually Daniel Jauch had asked me, like right after Auto Layout shipped for the Mac, he was like, "So is this going to be on iOS?"
But plan that. That was
that?
Maybe I shouldn't have said that. You that was out of your hands.
Well, it wasn't entirely. I mean, okay. So what I told. So I was first like, at first I was like, I'm not going to be able to answer this in any way that you're going to like. but the reason I remember it is because what I did tell him, he was actually happy I told him that. So I guess maybe it is sometimes worthwhile, right? And I mean, what I said at the time was that, you know, it's designed to be cross-platform. It's certainly, you know, it wasn't like it was designed like, oh, my iOS is a thing. I forgot. Like, you know, it was in our heads. But
certainly the problem it solves is independent of any kind of platform.
Yeah, exactly, right? It's just a layout system. For what it's – okay, I'm going to take a quick note. Auto layout, that's a marketing name. it's not
what
auto.
What you call
it's
it?
I think auto layout's a fine name. It just is a marketing name, and you can't focus overly much on the auto part. It's just a way of doing layout. And I hope it's a good way of doing layout. I hope it's close to the way you want to think about the mental model, but it's not any more auto than anything else. You still have to say what happens. you know, I just hope you get to say it in a way that is really close to what you're really thinking about instead of translating everything into, you know, frames, which means you did a bunch of math. I forgot what we're talking about. Sorry. I was finishing the Daniel Jauch story. Sorry, if that's okay. So what I told him was that, you know, it was designed to be platform independent, but, you know, if I were, but, and obviously I can't come out in the future, but if I were the iOS group, I would wait and see how things went down on the Mac before, you know, before looking at that, right? I'm actually super, you know, so it was definitely not a given that it was going to necessarily come to iOS, but I'm really happy that. I'm really happy with the way that went. That, you know, sometimes I think that there's been times when UIKit and AppKit have diverged sort of unnecessarily.
Sure.
And I actually think that's been a lot better lately, and I have reason to think it's going to be better in the future. Here's a future thing, I guess.
Do you have public reason or private reason?
It's not secret, but it's not secret, but it's not exactly public. The AppKit group and the UIKit group now sit next to each other.
That's good to know.
Yeah, so that's good deal, right?
Right.
So, yeah. And they didn't for a long time.
No.
I mean, UIKit definitely came out of AppKit. I mean, the first UIKit actually the other way I got my job is that Andrew Platzer left the AppKit group to go be the first like UIKit engineer, and that left an opening, and that's the opening I took in 2005. So, and then I knew something was going on, but I didn't really know what it was for another 2 years, you know.
So you're downplaying yourself a lot. You took control of NS Image.
I didn't do that right away.
But I mean,
the first
you
so,
ran Coco for not ran, but you had significant impact on the AppKit framework for a long time.
Yeah. I did eventually, but like that's the thing. So like I still kind of think that okay, so. So on the subject of whether or not they should have actually hired me, okay? So for so the
well,
so
the answer is no, you're an idiot. So
no, I think they got lucky. Okay, I mean, I think to some extent they made a they made what was plausibly a bad decision, and then it worked out. Okay, on the other hand, I would
you
say
for fix that imposter syndrome, man. It's not doing any good.
It's fine. It's fine. I'm not. It's okay. I'm not like worrying about this, right? I mean, okay. I will say though, for anybody who's thinking about applying at Apple, the other side of that is I now realize that you should never feel bad about applying to a group. Like, A, it's their job to figure out if they want you or not, and like, don't worry about it. Like, it's just show them who you are, and then let them worry about whether or not that's appropriate. Like, you don't feel,
I 100% agree. Just yeah. Go for it.
Just go for it. And yeah. The other aspect of that, that like I don't know how to say this quite without being too mean, but like I've now interviewed a lot of people, and I now understand that like if somebody shows up and they can basically code, it's a good day. So
right. Yeah, that's probably a topic for a whole show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Believe me, if you think you suck. And you know some kind of thing, and you can follow along with like all the buzz lines and the buzzwords that we use here. Apply; you'll do well. Like, trust me. Trust me. You'll be okay.
Yeah, don't.
If you can follow this show, you'll be fine. Just it's worth applying.
Yeah. So don't self censor yourself. Like let them do it, and don't worry about like wasting their time, because the waste of time is when somebody shows up who can't write a form.
It's their job, right?
And that happens. Right. So
via Gondeos programmatis. Uber Alice, whatever the hell. You know, just whatever.
All right. I think that was Latin. Maybe? Yeah.
Yeah, close enough. Who cares?
Can you conjugate Latin? Good deal.
No, I can't. So, okay. So you landed in this job that you thought you were unqualified for, which I've done more than a few times. And that's a great way to go about having a job.
It's good, certainly. I think it was very useful that I was very, like, I was very open to, you know, I knew that everybody else around me knew more than I did. And I think that was very helpful.
Sure.
And there's some really, really good people. Oh, I should, by the way, say on the subject of Andrew Platzer, I wasn't like completely new Andrew Platzer. That kind of got split between me and, Peter Ammon and Corbin Dunn. They were already in the group. I took the spot, but I didn't just get all Andrew's stuff.
Yeah. So nobody's right.
No, nobody is. I mean, I was the
Corbin,
new Andrew.
Please keep my table view working.
Yeah. I actually, you know what? I'm trying to think what did Corbin get from Andrew? I don't know. He might've been giving it away again. Oh, he got browser, I think. Anyway.
And he's another I feel like I'm spilling the beans here, but Corbin Dunn, another guy who's kind of public for being an Apple dude.
Right.
And will pretty much just answer any question you ask.
Absolutely. Him. Right. I mean Corbin's like big superpower is that he is just super fast. You give him a thing to do and it's just done. Yeah. Also,
turns out he's a nice guy and likes tree houses.
And like lived in a tree house for 5 years. World unicycling marathon champion. I don't know if he still is.
It sounds like we're talking about somebody that's like, if we were riffing on a joke, this would be what we'd have. You know, he's probably dresses up as Batman.
Yeah, no, he Apple
might.
Engineer.
He actually
he
might.
He could. I could see that. Right. Yeah. He's an interesting guy. Often seen shirtless. Coco engineer most likely to be seen shirtless.
And not in a bad way.
Well, you would. I mean, also Coco engineer you'd most want to see shirtless. anyway, there's a couple other people who are reasonably well built, but Corbin probably beats it.
This is the best worst.
I don't know where we're going.
Ever.
Well, what do you want to talk about?
Well, okay, so you felt a little bit uncomfortable when you joined Apple, But I mean, come on, you had.
Oh, I was super excited about it. Right. I wasn't like. I mean, I was ecstatic, right? I mean, like I said, I mean, this was. I mean, it, and more than that, right? I mean, not only did I want to work at Apple, but like the. But the Cocoa Group, working in the Cocoa Group was probably like the single job in the world that I was most interested in doing. Yeah. There was nothing, you know, I mean.
2004, 2005.
Ooh, 2005.
Yeah. Great time. Like, yeah.
It was amazing, right? And it's still, I mean, I really
OS
recommend.
OS 10 wasn't stupid anymore. And it was like the rocket ship was all primed to take off, I think.
Yeah, so it was good, and I still and you know, and obviously at this point, it's become actually fashionable to like pick on AppKit a certain amount.
But still, I really hate that.
I think that's just kind of it's a weird Twitter group thing too.
Right.
So I very much recommend it for any, and they do have open recs. So if you want to, you know, you can apply for that group right now, and I super recommend it.
Yeah, if you're smart and listening to this and are chuckling a little bit. Please apply to AppKit.
Yeah,
it's good. You know, we need good people there.
Did you see Peter Hose? He just got hired.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, so that's good. That's the same group, pretty much.
Also, not a dummy.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. He's working on Foundation, I think. But it's really the same group. So that was the other thing. So it's actually quite small. When I was there, I was the 13th person in the group.
Really?
Yeah, and that was doing AppKit and Foundation and Core Foundation. So,
Apple needs a few more people.
Well, so A is bigger
now. I'm always blown away by how small the teams are. Like, I'm close enough to a lot of people that work in the company that I'm aware of the general team size. But every single time it's actually laid out for me, I'm like, what?
Well, the other thing you might not realize is Cocoa's not as like okay. So actually, one of the things I feel like I've learned from Apple is like those small groups. That's a huge thing because getting everybody on the same page, like getting unanimity of decision making, is
right.
Really a big deal. And just the more people you have, the harder that's going to be, and the more overhead there is. So I think there's really a lot to be said for like operating at the like. Pain point of not enough people. Right. And that's actually something I'm, you know, I feel like I've, so like with Passbook, I mean, you know how many people we had working on that,
yeah.
Right?
And I'm going to say it anyway. You guys, your office was literally in the hallway, as I understand.
Yes.
It.
Yes. Well, yeah. We had, so.
Okay, I think
so
I know all three of you.
Right. So there were three engineers and a manager. Do you know the manager? Because he's more impressive than us.
Really? Well, you can tell me offline if you don't want to blow it.
No, but. I can say. So Scott Herz is managing that group.
Yeah.
And he I think it's probably fair to say he was like the first person working on like the OS 10 based version of the iPhone. I'm not totally sure that's correct. But anyway, he's done like a lot of really interesting stuff.
Yeah. By OS 10, you mean the...
I mean the non-iPhone.
The new, like, right, the non-iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So that the iPhone, you know, the iPhone is a lot like OS 10, and as opposed to being a lot like an iPod. And I actually am not like super on top of this, so I'm going by pretty much the same information you've seen. But my understanding is that originally it was more based on the iPod, and it came, and then it switched. And,
yeah, that's my understanding too. I just wanted to make it clear to listeners who may think that like, oh my God, there's going to be Windows on the iPhone soon. Like,
yeah.
No, that's right.
But like, I mean, you know, but like Scott. I got to read the – Scott was like, oh, would you be interested in reading this like, you know, big email basically that I wrote up about how we should do the architecture of the iPhone, which is basically like doing all the CA layer stuff as opposed to on Mac where it's all DrawRec based, right? And it's like,
yeah.
Oh. It's
and, you know, this goes towards kind of stuff that you've worked on, but listeners should also know that LayerKit started on the iPhone before it came to OS 10, and it came to OS 10 first. But it was, as I understand it, maybe you can correct me, Ken.
I'm actually not sure.
Really?
I've gone, you might have to ask somebody who's a little, like, I thought that was true, but then at some point I thought that, I came to be under the impression that actually the guy who was, so John Harper is the main, is the dude who wrote most of core animation.
Yeah.
And
I guess.
Yeah, he's also pretty crazy.
Not a dummy.
Yeah, also gets code out at a ridiculous rate.
Right.
I kind of have the understanding at the moment that he was kind of doing that kind of because he wanted to, sort of like because he was interested. Mm-hmm. And then that the and then Scott and company kind of like seized on it and was like, we can use this. We can. This is gonna solve our problems. But I'm
that's interesting. Not, okay.
And so I think he actually originally was targeting the Mac, but I could be. This could be false.
Yeah. Okay. I'll hunt that down. I really thought it got fleshed out as part of the iPhone project. But
honestly, I'm not even sure who you could ask. Like Scott Hers would know, but unless you're going to email him, I don't know. you can ask Forstall. Forstall would know, but I don't know if you've got him.
Well, Scotty and I are good friends. Yeah. I'll just call him up after the show. That's fine.
Yeah. So.
I call him Scotty, you know.
Yeah, you know. Differentiates him from other Scots you might know. There was one. Oh, I think it was Hers. There is some good story. Have you? Oh, no, it was Steve LeMay. There was some good story where there was a meeting where there were too many Steves, I guess. One of whom was Jobs.
Yeah.
And at some point, you ever heard this one? Okay. And then he just – and so at some point he goes – you're Doris to I think it was Steve LeMay, who's a designer. So yeah, Doris.
Just assigns a name to somebody.
Yeah. Oh well.
What a dick. That's just awesome.
Well, no, it wasn't the story that Jobs had been away for a while when LeMay started, and then when he was just used to it, when people would say, Steve, what do you think? They were talking to him. Yeah. And then when Jobs came back and people said, Steve, what do you think? He answered. And then Doris was a result.
I can buy that. I wasn't there. Yeah, actually, something I really would love to see is, folklore.org, which is the, for listeners, which is the stories of the development of the Macintosh, which is amazing. You should go.
Oh, it's killer.
It's great. Yeah. I want to see that for the iOS bring up.
I, you know what? It'll happen.
It will. So, and it, so
if the it person, takes me in 20 years going to talk to them, like most people, it's going to happen. Like,
so this has been, so Scott Hers and he's talked about, like, I don't think he feels like he can do it. And I hope that right now, and I hope that it does get done before everybody forgets, you know,
right.
Forgets the stories, but he's talked about it. And I think, I don't even know if maybe he takes notes. I don't know, but he's real quick. Like he's a good storyteller too. So, I think
that's great. I honestly, just from a historical perspective, I think that's just good for, and this is going to sound grandiose, but I think that's just good for humans. Let's capture this. And
well, that's one of the things that was really interesting with, you know, knowing that the stuff is made by humans, right? Which is, I think, really easy to forget. You see it very much. Like, it's really funny. Like, I still follow – I shouldn't, but I have searches set up for, like, auto layout and NS image and all that stuff. Yeah. So, like, basically whenever anybody says anything, there I see it. And people do not remember that they're talking to a person.
No, you know? People are kind of jerks about a lot of stuff.
It's okay. You know, I mean, we can – fine. It is what it is, but like they definitely.
Well,
like,
you know what? I don't know if it's okay, but you need to have grown a thick skin.
Yeah.
I figure you have at this point. So
I mean, it definitely still like gets me sometimes, but I think it probably would be better for me to stop maintaining those, you know, stop looking at those searches.
But, you know what? You do a service to the world every time you answer an auto layout question because you are on that ball and you really help a lot of people out.
Sometimes it depends on the, you know, usually the thing is like so many people, you know, Twitter's kind of great and kind of terrible because on the one hand, people say a lot of stuff on Twitter that they would never say anywhere else because it's so low cost.
Right.
But you also just can't tell what they're saying. Right. Yeah. Like, and someone says something, and all you get is like emotion and conclusion and you don't know enough to be able to actually say anything.
Yeah. I have a lot of that in relation to this show, actually, where I'm like,
I'm sure. Yeah.
Sorry. Like, I don't know where to go with that. So
like, yeah. Like, if someone's like, oh, that guy is an asshole, you're like, well, I don't even know why you're saying that, right?
Well, so. I do because I am an asshole. So that one actually makes sense.
But, yeah. Well, okay.
You know, a lot of the more nuanced ones, I'm just like,
I can't believe guy said that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Bit freak. But especially something as complicated as an API.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and for better or for worse, the AutoLayout has this property that the we did a sufficiently good job, I think, of minimizing the actual API footprint that the conceptual footprint compared to the API footprint is, it's a weird balance, you know?
And so. Privately, we've talked about this offline. I'm an old school guy. I'm still trying to wrap my head around this.
Yeah, yeah.
I know it's better. And I'm still kind of like, can I have my springs and struts? Because understood that. And where's my, you know, where's my knee brace, basically?
Well, so, okay, let me say just a little tiny bit about this, okay?
Yeah.
So actually, I will say, so to anybody who doesn't know what auto layout is, it's actually really easy to say what it is, okay? You know how, like, when you're dragging something around in Keynote or in PowerPoint and things snap, you know, you get these blue guidelines that say you're snapped into the corner or you're snapped into centering with this other thing or you're snapped so sizes match or whatever like that, right? And you see these blue... You see these blue lines that show that, kind of like an architectural drawing.
They're yellow, you idiot, but sure.
They're yellow in Keynote. orange, I'd say. the blue was from Interface Builder.
Yeah, I know.
well, that was for everybody else.
I'm just an asshole. Hey.
Yeah, you know. It's cool. anyway, the point is that So in those programs, typically those guidelines are helping you fix a good rectangle for whatever it is that you're dealing with. But then they go away. As soon as you let go, those guidelines are gone. And what AutoLayout is about is about saving those and saying that relationship is permanent. And that's and it doesn't save it. It literally does save the frame. But I'm going to claim it doesn't save the frame. Mm-hmm. It just saves those guides, which are then called constraints because they constrain the way the interface is allowed to change. So and so that's really all it is. Like, so one, for example, one thing that people often, I think, get a little tied up on is they think that auto layout is about math because of the implementation. And it's not. It's about relationships. It's about saying this button's next to that button or these two things are the same width. And that's it. You know?
Right. Like, I mean, the implementation is some pretty hardcore math, frankly.
It is.
If you think about, like, what's actually happening.
It is, but you know, and sometimes that matters, right? Obviously, it's not complete. It's exposed, you know. It's not completely implementation detail that these things. So the point is that these relationships are expressed as math because they're expressed as saying something like this button this button's left side is equal to this button's right side plus 20. You know, that's right. That's a mathematical expression. But like for example, when you're debugging, people. They don't realize that, like, they don't need to be doing math to debug it. What they need to be doing is looking at those relationships. They need to say, right. You know, like, well, okay, so when it says, like, this is inconsistent, you've told me a bunch of constraints and they can't all hold. What you want to do is it gives you, it says, like, these, in a really simple case, it might say, like, you said it should be width 100 and you also said it should be width 300. One of those is wrong. Like, which one is it?
Yeah, but that's not often the case, right? Like that is a very simple to understand
understand case. But so part of it is I don't know how much I want to go into like the small talk orientation, which is kind of how it's designed. But
don't want to hold your feet to the fire for something that's Apple's issue. Okay. If you're good with it, let's
all right. I'm going to talk about Jalka again. Okay, Jalkits. This is two Jalkits, because he's the one who really did it to me. Because I was visiting, Boston. Okay, actually, when I was working on understudy, I was up there for a little bit.
And you know, we're actually supposed to be talking about. Yeah.
Are we? I assumed you wanted to talk about Apple.
Yeah, we'll get to it. No, we're here to
I was up there and I went to Cocoa Heads, Boston.
Right.
That's a monthly one, right? Yeah. Anyway, I went in there and I actually had lost my voice. I was sick. Mm-hmm. And Daniel like came in like, this is Ken. He wrote out a layout. And then for 40 minutes, I was just, answering everything, which is fine. I really don't mind, but that was the most, egregious, like,
yeah, to be honest, like, right. When there are Apple people around, I don't do that. Not because I'm like the old emerita, like you don't talk about Apple, you know. It's more like I like these people and I don't want to throw them under the bus for like 3 hours while I answer dumbass questions about like, well, my pointer didn't dereference. It's like, well, that's not our, I can't, that's a thing. You
know,
like,
well, you know, I mean, I actually really don't mind so much. I mean, it was just,
yeah, funny. Nobody minds, but it takes up a lot of time, right?
It does take up a lot of time, but it's also like, in, to some extent, you know how I was saying, like, if you've got a lead, like, ask him good questions. Don't ask like when the iPhone's coming out.
Yes.
Like, these are actually good questions. Like, if you want to understand like how
to debug
auto layout or how to think about auto layout, these are not bad questions. So,
That's fair enough. I mean, they're just, for the audience, if you do manage to corner somebody from Apple, just ask a good question. It's sure there's no dumb questions. Fine. That's a thing. How about ask a good question? Like, you've got a limited amount of time. Like, make it count.
And I think just use common sense. Like just like watch how they're reacting, right? If they if they feel cornered, then you know, get them out.
These people are off the clock.
Remember,
and
they're human.
They say is like helping you. And they're probably not even supposed to be talking to you. So
it's usually fine. You know, as long as we're
right.
It really depends what you're, you know. So the problem is like, if you say anything that's going to be construed by people as you speaking for Apple, that's bad.
Yeah.
And it's really,
I promise you, if you say wearable, I will punch you in the face. you don't get to say that.
Oh, you're saying that's what marketing would say. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just don't. Yeah. Don't
right. Well, and the other reason, but the other aspect of that is to really realize that oftentimes the only reason why anybody cares what you have to say is that they know you're from Apple, right? So it's really hard to say stuff that's not on behalf of Apple, because otherwise they wouldn't even
totally assumed. And
so,
you know what? I mean, oh god, I'm going to go on a tirade here, but like when the press runs a story from an Apple genius in a store, I'm like, that's,
or a customer service rep,
yeah.
That's
if you wouldn't be talking to them, if you wouldn't be talking to them if they didn't work at Apple, then you're treating them as a company representative. So
I agree. Anyway, let's not get angry anymore.
Can I step back from it and just ask you how you got from Cocoa to Auto Layout?
To Auto Layout.
Yeah.
Well, so that's still Cocoa. That's still in the Cocoa group.
Yeah.
But you
know what? Biggest change to AppKit. In, I'm gonna say 10 years.
It depends how you count it. It's the it's the biggest change, right?
Because
it's a change. It's not an addition.
Right.
It's I think
it's not like Outline View or
right.
You know,
written by Force at all, by the way, as you probably know.
I do know. Also, not a dummy.
Nope. Pretty smart guy, as far as I can tell. So how did I work on Auto Layout? Well, so the previous release for 10.6, most of my work was on NS Image. I was doing sort of a rewrite of the whole imaging architecture. Not really changing its API very much, but there were a lot of a guy probably remembers. It had a lot of quirks. A lot of performance issues.
There's old school methods that just should not exist, that are just
So it was on this
composite
to point,
right? Is all
composite to point. Yeah, that's a bad one. But even like, so the really basic issue under the hood is that way back on Next, there was only one way anything could draw. Okay. And that was with a view. So when you had an image, that was really a way of saying what you had was a view, but you wanted to like be able to pick it up and put it other places. So it was literally like there was a window somewhere that you didn't have, okay, and that you didn't have access to. But there was a real window, and there was a rectangle in that window that was being called your image, okay. And so then when you
drew, it's because of the display PostScript heritage, right?
Yes, in terms of performance, but also I think in terms of simplicity, there was only one way of drawing. Like if you were drawing, it meant you were drawing to a view. That was the only thing that was ever going on, which was actually kind of great, you know?
And for the audience, a view does not necessarily need to be on screen. It can be a view is into the context in which you're drawing. So it could be center.
So there was a window, but the window, it's as if the window was closed. The window
The window can either be on screen, or the window, quote unquote, maybe a piece of paper. Like,
yeah, No, in this case, it really was a window. Right. But yeah, but it was an off. You could actually bring the window on screen. It was this funny, like every time you allocate an image, it would do this like malloc like algorithm where it would look for a rectangle in the window that wasn't already used that could be like where your image would go.
And what? That is. Yeah. that should not happen.
Yeah,
why it does happen, but
So that's gone now.
Performance, right, is because you want to get things oriented into screen space effectively.
Yeah, so in some sense simplicity, right? Like it's like if you've already got we're talking about where there aren't two drawing systems. There's not like Quartz is this whole other thing, and that just didn't exist. And in a lot of Quartz is a wonderful thing, but in a lot of ways, it also was very simplifying to have exactly one thing. Okay. For years we had to deal with the fact that NSRect and CGRect were different, right? And that's because Quartz got put in below.
Thanks God, 64 bit.
Yeah, thank goodness.
the Hunger Games salute for 64.
Though that's another thing where I'm really glad that the compiler is part of things that Apple has a little bit more ability to change these days.
Yep.
Because really, okay, fine. NSRect and CGRect, you know what? They were always the same thing. Okay.
Yep.
Like, and I don't care. Like, you want to be able to.
You could cast them.
Yeah, but I want the compiler to make that not necessary. Right. I want the compiler to understand these are the same. Like, I don't like the layering. If it's the layers that are preventing you from making improvements, then you need to redo the layers.
Right. I agree.
So.
And then, it's happened. It does, it's a continuous process, but it's happening. Yeah.
But I think I think one of the really good things about Clang being something that Apple has more ability to change now is that when you have, take the NSXPC. Okay. So this was about doing, communication from one application to another one on the Mac. Okay. And also on iOS, but on iOS, only the system can do it. So,
well, it exists. I in fact discovered XVC looking at iOS 4 or 5 headers. It leaked, and I sent a message to somebody on the team. I'm like, you guys need to maybe be more careful about that. It's like, don't worry about it. It's not going to be public.
So in the case of XPC, though, all right, so this is an example of the point of this was reworking the layering. So you want to be able to have one process, one application talk to another application. And in order to make that secure, you need to sort of know a certain amount about the intended ways that they're supposed to talk to each other so that if some rogue process is trying to attack you, it can't just do anything to your app.
Right. Okay? Can't do a man-in-the-middle attack.
Yeah, and so
unless you go to fail, I guess.
Unless
zing.
Yeah. line of code was just a gift to headline writers.
I know,
and also to James Dempsey, who wrote a song. Anyway, which is good. You should go listen to it. All right. Anyway, so Cocoa already has a way of communicating, like a list of ways something's supposed to interact, which is protocol. Right. Okay, like this is a formal thing. But a protocol, turns out, for purposes of XPC, didn't capture enough information. Not in terms of what the programmer wrote down, that was all fine, but the compiler didn't capture it all. It didn't keep the types.
Well, okay, so that's interesting because distributed objects added a bunch of keywords to the language, like one way and stuff, in order to enable a better capturing of these kind of things. But it wasn't sufficient to support XVC.
Well, so the particular problem that they're trying to deal with XVC is that if you think that – let's see. So say you have – so a protocol you can try to filter it and say like only objects of this type can come through, okay? But if you can't tell what type something is until you've instantiated it, until you've already read the data and made the thing, then you've already let some code run in the app that maybe hasn't been hardened against this kind of interaction.
Yeah. Parsers are that's kind of the sweet spot of, what you attack.
Yeah. Right.
In a lot of ways.
Like file formats, right? So XPC doesn't capture the type information. Sorry, the protocol doesn't capture the type information in a way that's going to let you pre-check before you've even instantiated this thing what type it was. Okay, that was the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but, and originally when this thing, so when NSXPC was being proposed, there was all this additional API to try to communicate the types, and it would have been more work for the programmer. And it's also a little bit frustrating because it feels like you're saying the same thing twice, because the protocol already has all those words. It's just not actually capturing it. So it's really good. But instead we changed the compiler to actually capture the right stuff. So the NSXPC is a better interface. And that's good, right? That's what you need to be able to do. So if the layering is keeping you from making the changes that you need to make in order to make things better, then you need to rework the layering.
I agree, and I think they've been making sort of great strides towards that. I don't even want to talk to you about this because I think it's a little too close to home. But the contracts that Android has, and I forget what.
Contracts
Microsoft
and intents.
Intents, the intents that Microsoft has. I think that's a feature that should be added to iOS. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk to you about that.
I would tend to agree with you, but I don't know enough about them. You don't want to talk to me about them because I haven't done Android programming.
Well, there's that, and my fear is that people take whatever you say as
a little too gospel.
Yeah. And I know that you don't know, so I don't really want to, I don't even.
Yeah, I probably got to be a little, you're right. I should be maybe. I think
no,
it's
no,
funny.
I'm doing it for you. I'm being more.
I know you are. No, I think it's funny that you're being more careful than I am. Like,
no, that's great. And people can yell at me for being like, hey, why didn't you ask him about them? But it's like, he doesn't know. And whatever you thought he was going to say.
Yeah.
I think you're a smart, intelligent guy. Have good things to say about it, but I worry that people would just take it as like
just walk around that minefield.
Example guy says blah, which is
so. I don't. I'll say this much then. Even though you just said that you're not even going to make me right, I would love to see some work there. I don't know what the right thing to do is on iOS.
Right.
Like I haven't thought enough about it. I actually did have some stuff I wanted to do on OS X that was sort of like around this area, but I left before I did it. So. Or left before I was able to attempt to convince anybody that we ought to do it. So,
well. And you left because you wanted to do. This is my shitty idea of a segue. But,
okay. Yeah. I left. So, you want to say I left the Coco or I left Apple?
It's your story to tell, buddy.
All right, fine. Okay, I'm going to say briefly about when I was leaving Coco because I think it does actually end up playing in. Okay, so
yeah.
So like I said, I mean, the Coco group was kind of like there was no other job at Apple that I wanted to do more than that, right? So why did I ever stop? Okay, and there are a couple of reasons. So like one is that there were a little bit diminishing returns. Like the if there's something that the Coco group is good at, it's API design.
Okay. Yeah.
There's otherwise, that's the only thing the group is actually expert at everything else. Cause the group does a whole bunch of stuff, right? But like, it's sort of pulling in from everywhere, but it pulls it in and unifies it and has a coherent design. And that's what the group's all about.
Yeah. And just for the record, API design, not a joke.
Yeah. Don't know.
Like getting it right is incredibly hard.
Yeah. No, I'm super interested in it. So the point is like after doing that for 6 years, it's not like I can claim to be a master of that because I don't think you're ever like done. But it was a little bit diminishing returns. And in particular, I also feel like it's a little bit like dishonest to work on frameworks without working on apps in some sense.
Hmm.
How are you supposed to like
feedback, right?
You want to feel it from both sides, Like you're writing the framework serves the well, I said it's actually a funny thing, right? Coco has two distinct groups of users it's serving. It's serving the developer and it's also serving the end user. For sure, right? Like it builds in a lot of UI.
Right. I mean, NS document is kind of maybe that's like the avatar for that kind of idea where the document infrastructure is kind of cumbersome from an API point of view, but you can see why it's serving the end user. Like it's.
Well, and the new stuff has made that harder too, I think. Like dealing with iCloud makes documents API more challenging.
I agree, but so you know, NS button. Well, you can fix it or you can't. You
which
know,
I like, owned. Which I owned.
Oh, good so, work.
Yeah, you know, my girlfriend used to introduce me as the person who makes the button butt, which is a very useless way to introduce me because it just made it sound like I didn't do anything. So
better than you killed somebody.
Well,
right. So there's the button. There's the checkbox. I guess you own that too. There's the table view. I think that's Corbin. There's a bunch of other stuff. But NS document really right. gets into like, how's the user going to be interacting with the application?
Yeah.
And what does that mean from an API point of view? Like it's
a whole model. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Like a user model. It's the way the user thinks of it. Like right. what is a document? But you know, it's, you know, even button has that, right? Like you have certain expectations. Sure. If yeah. you press your mouse down and then move it off the button, right? Like yeah. you have
it's
an
expectation. It's got to cancel the action happen, if you're right? far enough away from the.
Yeah. And if you're, and if everybody's implementing that, that's a system policy, right? Like that's a way that, that's part of what makes the Mac the Mac. Right. I mean, in my mind, it's a lot of what makes the Mac is that there's these things that always work the same.
No, I totally agree. Yeah. The way the menus work, the way the buttons yeah. work, the way that you can cancel from a just that the works. Way it feels. It's
yeah.
it's a thing, and it's crafted, and it's Cocoa intentional.
And Cocoa is responsible for a lot of that look and feel.
Yeah. So, and back when Apple first bought Next, a lot of that was up in the air.
Yeah.
Because the specific heuristics weren't quite the same, right? So
no.
there's been a lot of work to try to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the way, so the way you can hold your mouse down on a menu
mm-hmm.
and pick right, something and then release, right. that's old school Mac behavior. It doesn't work the same on Windows. And, you know, people at Apple have put like a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into getting it.
Yeah. Right.
So quote unquote correct. I'll say correct, but.
Well, you know, it's consistent anyway.
Sure.
Doing something that's good, thinking about it hard, you know, so that, and then setting up the APIs such that if somebody doesn't intentionally say do something different, then they're going to get the most normal thing, you know?
Right.
Which was a big part of auto layout. You know, one of the things about auto layout is, right, like say, you know, say you're going to, with springs and struts, when you take a button and put it down, right, you always have to give the width of that button, no matter what, right? With auto layout, if you only say it if you're trying to say something new, you know, if you're trying to say, I don't want this button to be its usual width, I want it to be this other width. And that draws, and that means, like, ideally, every single character of code you type, every line is going to be a divergence from normal. Like, everything should be meaningful because it should be saying, this is how it diverges from the most expected thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Guys, I don't like it.
Well, I'm just an old man, and learning new shit is, like, confusing.
Yeah.
But, no, I know exactly what you mean,
yeah.
and I am actually slowly wrapping my head around it.
We should talk about it sometime. I can.
Yeah. No, and you're incredibly helpful. Like, it's ridiculous how nice and helpful you are about this kind of stuff.
Well.
But because at this point, I'd be like, you know what? Fuck you. Just get your head around it. Go and go away.
Well, if you ever install the app I'm working on, it's actually a really good way to talk about this stuff. So,
understudy.
Yes. Actually, do you want me to talk about that? Or do you want to talk about
just leaving can you out? Finish up quickly why you left?
All right. Okay. So after doing this, thank you. Thanks, Renee.
well, no, because you said it mattered later.
It did. So I ended up thinking pretty hard about like what I was after. Okay. Like, you know, how those objectives on your resume and you're like, I don't know, man. Right. And everybody read stupid stuff. So I ended up coming up with like there were three things I was really after. I wanted to, you know, I want to make the world better. Okay. That's like the primary thing I really, really want to do. To do that, I think I have to be like learning because otherwise I basically just don't know enough to do anything useful. and then I have to be happy, like a certain level of happiness myself, or else I'm just not going to be able to do anything. So those were sort of like the three things that like personal happiness sort of that I ended up deciding were my most important characteristics for what I was going to work on. And which might sound a little trite like now, but like I swear a lot of thought went into that. and then as a sort of as a corollary or something, that the primary way to do that is to work with people who you really, really respect and really, you know, can learn a lot from and things like that. So actually I should say, like, one of the reasons why working on Coco was so good was that, like, so the group is led by Eliezer. He does, and the way, if you want to propose an API in Coco, you go off and you, as an engineer, and you come up with some area that you think needs fixed. You know, maybe you've been reading a lot of bugs. Maybe you've just been thinking about, I don't know, whatever. You come up with something you think should happen. Okay. You design it and you bring it to the group and everybody talks about it. Okay. And at the end of the day, in order for it to actually happen, there are two people who have to agree. One of them is you and the other one is Ali. And so there's, so that's, and everybody else, like everybody else can offer their feedback and you should listen to it, but it's understood that, you know, it can't be designed by committee. Like you should raise these concerns. It's the responsibility of the proposer to listen to the concerns carefully, but at the end of the day, it's not actually a committee. But Ali has veto power. So it's really important that, on the one hand, it means you can actually do stuff, right? Because there's only one other person you have to convince. And on the other hand, but you have to have the confidence that if you have something you think should happen and you explain it to Ali as best as you can and he still doesn't agree, then you have to have the confidence that, okay, it's pretty likely I'm wrong, you know?
Well, is it wrong or is it more not suiting the structure that's because you don't want, you can be right, but in the greater scheme of things, or the greater.
Then I mean in the greater scheme. I mean, the timing. But you should always be looking at the greater scheme. I mean, like, you're not right if you're, you know, there's lots of, you know, that's almost saying like you would be right if it weren't for consistency, right? But right. Consistency is important.
Yeah. Oh yeah, so it's huge.
Yeah, and I don't, and like I'm a big fan of sort of like a holistic design. Like I don't like to try to compartmentalize. If that makes sense.
Sure.
So I wouldn't typically be, I just call that wrong. you know?
Yeah, that's a good way to think. It's wrong in the, okay, it works. It's fine. It's internally consistent, but in the greater world in which we're operating in, it's just wrong. Like, it's,
you know, and it's not to say, and that's not to say that every single thing needs, and you know, there's always this quote about Steve Jobs and Johnny Ive. I was like, Ive or Ives? you know, like designing the inside of the case or the back where nobody's going to see. I have to say, I feel a little bit weird about that particular one because I haven't seen that as much. Like, I think it's important.
It's a sausage factory. Like,
well, and it's also like, it's important to, yes, it all needs to be right, but right means different things at different levels. Like having if you're like an architecture astronaut and you have like everything, like you've built like a huge structure to solve little tiny problems, that's not good.
Right. You
know, like that's not what that means. And so sometimes like right means doing some hack and moving on, and there's nothing wrong with that.
I totally agree. I think a lot, oh my God, I'm totally going to get hate mail for this, but I think a lot of the talk about needing, or the fact that we will need to move on to new languages or new runtimes and all that.
Oh, the Objective-C business?
Yeah, has a lot to do with this sort of
higher
level. It's like you can do a hack and move on. Eventually, it will be true. Like, don't get me wrong, and I totally believe it. I just the impending sense of doom, I think, is misplaced.
I'm also really like you know, you look at something like Clang. One of Chris Lattner's tenets is
I don't know if we can say, but moved up the ranks, doing some good work.
I'm wondering if he moved further than I know of.
He now runs DevTools.
Okay, I knew that much. Yeah. I thought you were telling me he was running OS 10 or something.
No, but that was a quiet move, as far as I know. Like, if you work on DevTools on the Mac, Chris Lattner, the guy before behind Clang, is the guy running the show. So, you know, Clang, pretty awesome. The whole thing is under his control at this point, right?
Yeah, it is. Anyways, I was just gonna, so he has this attitude towards incremental change that I think is very, very useful, which is that the way that you get something done is first you figure out where you want to be. Okay. Which might be somewhere totally different where you are and that's fine. But then you figure out a path to get from where you are to where you want to be. And the path is to the greatest extent incremental. And you don't just throw it out and write again because it's just not going to work. You know? So, and I'm a big, like, if you look at, there's these posters on the wall in the Cocoa group about like what Cocoa looked like, you know, in Next Step 4 and stuff like that. And it looks nothing.
One of those old tree diagrams?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
yeah.
Or you know,
those won't fit on the wall anymore, but no, I do have a poster of like a class hierarchy. Yeah.
And it's totally different. It's the thing. Like, yes, you can see the lineage, but like I've seen the file merge code. Okay. You know how file merge didn't change for years and years? I can tell you why it didn't change, because that is the worst code I have ever seen.
Yeah.
But worst is kind of a funny thing. It's just not Cocoa code. Like, it's written in Objective-C. It's using classes you recognize, but it feels strange. It's just not Cocoa code.
Did that predate Foundation? That's an old.
I don't know.
It's
I mean, obviously, it's on Foundation now, right? So I don't know. Very well might have predated it. Mm. I have some feeling that Mike Ferris wrote it, but I could be wrong about that.
Also, not a dummy.
Anyway,
if you hear a name on this, not dummy.
Yeah. Not the dummy
list. I do really miss that at Apple, actually. All those not people to talk to. Mm.
Is Mike still at Apple?
He was when I left, yeah. Mm. He was working on developer tools. Oh, he was gone for a long time. He was working at Pixar, but he came back.
Okay.
I
love when you leave Apple, you get to go to Pixar.
Pixar sabbatical.
Yeah, I don't know what he was doing at Pixar, but I hope it was fun. Yeah.
sure it was.
Yeah. Anyway, I was thinking about the stuff, all right? So what I ended up doing when I was leaving was I actually – so given that I had come up with like what I really want to do is basically going to be driven by people because you know, nothing that I said there is technology specific, right? It's not about a specific thing to work on. So I was like, okay, so who are these? Another aspect is, you know how on the internet, like you see people are like, oh, the engineer who's 10 times more productive than other engineers, right? Mm-hmm. That's like a thing. Okay. I haven't really seen that. Okay.
Right.
Because
it's a lie.
I don't know. All right. All I can say is I haven't seen it, but I've seen people who are really fast, but that's not quite the same thing. Hey. So I was going through and like, who would these people be? So one was Chris Lattner. One was a lead, but that's not really going to help. one was, a friend of mine who works on Go at Google, actually.
Cool. Okay. Yeah.
So I considered that and investigated it. They actually, turns out they don't hire anybody who doesn't already work at Google.
oh, really?
Yeah.
That is short-sighted.
Well, I mean, they also, I think, aren't really doing a whole lot of hiring periods. So,
Also, if your buddy wants to talk about Go, tell him to get in touch. Yeah.
I can try. I don't know. He's a machine. He's ridiculous. So I know him from college, and he may be the best programmer I know. Russ Cox.
Right. But you know me, so you know.
I never see your code, guy. I just hear you talk.
I know that's my secret. I play a good game.
You might be the best programmer. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't see your code.
Yeah.
Especially when you contract, I don't even get to know what you work on, right? So that was that. All right. So the way I ended up working on Passbook is I actually emailed Scott Hers and was just like, you know, I don't know, you know, I was like, I don't know what you're doing, but you're usually doing something interesting. Do you need help with whatever you're doing? and it turned out that Scott was going to be a manager for the first time and run what turned out to be Passbook. So that's how I got hooked up with that.
Bit of a good crew too. I got to say, I'm friends with the people he worked with. Smart folks.
And it was definitely interesting to, you know, like I said, I'd worked on frameworks for a long time. So to work on an app and to bring it up was very good. And actually I did really like working with those people. I think the single best thing though was actually working very closely with the interface designers.
Mm-hmm.
As you said,
three of you with an interface designer and two? Maybe?
He wasn't sitting with us. So the design group at Apple is its own. They don't report into the same Arkeas Engineering. They have their own group. But we were sitting at this. It was actually a prototype Apple Store table. So you know those like big wooden tables, okay? Yeah. Right, the Apple Store.
In
so
a
they had a prototype for one of those that you could see was a prototype because it was actually it was peeling up. but it's still a nice table.
Billion in the bank, and then like, well, we got this. Well,
I mean, those are nice tables, you know. Okay. It's just a prototype. So we actually did have offices. We just didn't use them. We all just sat around this table, and it was the three engineers and our manager sat around the table. But we were really close to where the design group sits. And there was a lot of crosstalk there, which was very nice.
Fascinated me. I really thought that would be a huge hit.
Yeah. No, I was worried this was going to happen. I mean, I don't think it's dead in the water.
No.
I'm not surprised by the. Obviously, people would prefer that it had a stronger uptake than it did, and I think we knew that there were problems.
I use it all the time. I use it for Starbucks. I use it for Air Canada. I'm about to be able to use it with Burger King.
I mean, yeah. But I mean, it's basically.
I mean, are the problems or is it? I mean, it's no, one of those issues of uptake.
Well, but you have influence over that, right? Like, I mean, so just to start, okay, like usually it's very rare for Apple to ship an application. Like, why did everybody want to ship iPhone apps? Okay. They wanted to ship them because the iPhone was by itself really interesting. Like without anybody else doing anything else, you already wanted to use it, right? And so everybody else wanted to play.
Yeah. Past I think I've years, told this story before, but I bought an iPhone before I could do anything except call 911. Like for like 3 weeks before I could figure out how to jailbreak it. It's like awesome. I have an iPhone and all I can do is slide this thing, but not too far because, you know, then I get arrested.
So right, but you get arrested. Nice. So Passbook's weird because it doesn't do anything, right? Like it all of the interest of Passbook has to come from third parties, and that means there's kind of a chicken and egg problem, right? Like why is anybody gonna do it if it's not already interesting? And that was known, you know, we knew that. I'm not gonna talk about what we anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Other issues, you know, when you go to Starbucks, which obviously is a Passbook supporting place, but whatever. So you see all those gift cards out there at Starbucks, right? Why are they there? They're there because they can sell you those gift cards. If you go to a place that supports Passbook, and you don't know it, you're not going to find out, or you wouldn't have found out prior to iOS 7 because there was no way for them to give you a pass. Like if the cashier is like, "Hey, do you want to buy this card?" And you're like, "Sure." They're like, "Okay, go to website." You know, like that doesn't fly. Like they can't hand you something. So that's a problem because it means you're never going to find out where you can use it. So that's partially, I think that's a little bit better in iOS 7 because you can now airdrop a pass. So the cashier could say, "Great, give me some money and I will airdrop you this pass." It's still a little bit too much.
Yeah.
You know, it's not quite there.
Not going to.
Right. Yeah, but it's in the right direction. It's like that. Sure. That's a problem that needs solved.
I agree. Yeah.
Okay. Like the cashier has to be able to give you the pass, or else it's not going to happen. You know, stuff like that. So you know, or like in the you know the way that people learned how to use the app, like the fact that there's this button that takes you to the App Store, but you shouldn't really be getting app passes from the App Store for the most part. You should be getting them from the web or getting them from your email. Like it's not well understood by either users or unfortunately developers, you don't need an app to make a pass.
Right.
Yeah. And especially when the companies don't understand, because the primary companies for using Passbook, they're not your typical app developers, right? Like they're your airlines and your,
they're the ones who make horrible UI web view apps that are torturous to use with tiny buttons. And
I wasn't going to say that because I was trying to be nice, but yeah. Okay. So the thing is if they get the wrong idea and they're going to get the idea first as users, then they're going to try to do all their integration through their app, not in the right way, which is that when you click a button on the website and buy your ticket, it's just like, okay, here's your pass, which is not typically how they do it.
Which is funny because people gripe about Apple being controlling, but then it's the stuff that's outside Apple's control that quite often causes the greatest frustration.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, yeah, I mean, what Apple wants, you know, Apple has this internal, I think where that comes, people feel like Apple want control for the sake of control, which I don't, I don't think that's true at all. But what they do want to be able to do, like, there's this understanding of responsibility. Like, as you said, Guy, like if you say, oh, Passport's great, people just aren't using it right. No, no, no. If your responsibility is to make Passport work, you have to make Passport work. And it doesn't, and like, it's your responsibility to figure out what has to happen. You can't compartmentalize. It's this holistic design thing. You can't compartmentalize and say, well, my part was right. It just doesn't work in the big picture. If it doesn't work in the big picture, it doesn't work.
Right.
You know?
But I'm not entirely sure that that's a failing of the product design or like something that's within the scope of the team. There's a greater thing there, right?
Yeah.
It's like the marketing has to do it. There's got to be like a lot of partnerships, you know, to get that kind of thing off the ground.
But that's what you get from having these tiny teams because
you
want to – like people – you don't have people who are so confined in their own world that they're not thinking about that.
Right.
It's everybody's responsibility to try to make the thing work, whatever.
Sure, but thinking about it and actually having the power to make it happen are different. I mean, could think about like, you know what? We really need Starbucks to pick this up.
Right.
What are you going to do? Go to your local Starbucks and like talk to the manager? Like it's a non-starter. Like you need to.
It's true. And that's something that makes it hard. But, you know, if you don't have answers to those things, then you need to do something else.
I do like, though, that Apple's patient with this stuff. Like, and I used the example before, you couldn't make turn-by-turn navigation apps at all when the App Store started. And then Apple let third parties do it, and then eventually they made their own. And it always felt to me like Passbook was a first step, and that one day, when people are more comfortable with mobile payments and the technology is more widespread, Passbook would be a familiar way to sort of hook all that stuff into the phone.
I have hopes it's going to be a good thing. But it's clearly not. But I think it would be... I don't think anybody would say that like they're happy with how, you know, I'm sure everybody would prefer it was going better than it's currently.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, so.
So how's understudy going?
Been talking.
It's.
Oh God.
I'm not even going to tell you.
I honestly think we could just do an entire season just talking to you.
Renee, you're probably gonna have to cut this part. I'm sorry, but like, I don't feel like I want to make people listen to 2 hours before I like. What should we do here?
Just say why you left Passbook.
Talking about your product.
Yeah, go into understudy.
All right.
Or just leaving Apple right into understudy.
Okay. All right. I'll try.
Do you want to keep going? Do you want to quit or what?
I'll
keep going. I'm just like bummed that I'm gonna talk for 4 hours.
That's fine. It's really fine. Don't worry about it. We'll. Yeah. Fix it. And by we, right. I mean, it's just Renee does it.
Sorry, Renee.
Sorry, buddy.
I am a talker. I should have warned you.
I knew it. I knew it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I worked on Passbook. And then probably like the thing that probably governed timing actually for why I left Apple after that was back when I was working on Auto Layout, I had an intern, Bridger Maxwell. Mm-hmm. And I really liked working with him a lot. And he graduated last spring. And I knew, you know, I'd been sort of thinking about if I wanted to do my own, you know, indie thing for a while. And if I knew if I was going to do it, Bridger is who I'd want to do it with. That kind of governed the timing, since once he got a job, he, you know, it's a lot harder to get somebody to do something different. Should I say what it is, I guess?
Yeah.
All right. So understudy, what understudy is, it's an iPad app for doing like college courses with a friend. Like if you want to do a course with a friend, but we find you the friend. Okay. and then you talk to them through video chat with a whiteboard. It's like FaceTime, but it's an iPad app, and the bulk of the surface of the iPad is going to be drawing. Renee was trying it with me. Renee actually had just about the best finger control I've seen, I think. You drew an amazing.
I was drawing Batman.
Yeah.
You got to draw Batman.
Well, and this Chinese dragon, which was really good. And you do it really fast. Anyway, so whiteboard. So the deal is, so we're going to be launching with two books, two courses. One is structured interpretation.
SCIP.
Yeah, SICKP. You know this one, Guy?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you read it?
No, I know of it. I know I should read it.
Okay.
So if you had a mentor, they could force you to read it.
Well, so that, no, this is super typical, right? Like, so the thing is, so I had that book for, so I, sorry, I should say first. So what is this thing? So
it's a classic comp sci book, right?
Yeah. I mean,
there's the OS book.
Yeah.
There's the Dragon compiler book and this one.
And if you go on Stack Overflow and you say, what can I do to become a better programmer? Yeah. This is going to be the top recommendation. People are going to say you should go through this book, SICKP. And what it is it's basically, it's like fundamentals of computer science, but it's fundamentals done really, really, really well and really carefully, so that it's stuff that you sort of kind of already know, but you can't necessarily articulate, and it really goes through it very carefully, and so you understand what you understand, if that makes sense. And that's actually, I'm curious, Guy, if that's what you thought it was, because people often think it's a much more advanced book than it is.
No, I kind of knew it was. I thought my impression is that it's almost a mathematical takedown of what it means to be a comp sci person. There's a precision to it,
there's precision. The math is actually a bit of a, I think math, it being a little bit overly mathematical, especially in the first chapter, is probably one of the few like criticisms one can reasonably levy at it.
Yeah. I don't mean to critique it. That was my impression, is that it's a very precise and logical. It's like as if Spock knocked on your door and was like, let me tell you how stupid you're being, and like laid it out.
It's much more of a story than that. Like, it's definitely so friendly. So like, for example, so like the first page has something I think is just really great. Okay. So I'm just going to tell you that. So how would you define, okay, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm sorry.
Uh-oh.
How would you define that? Please try to define for me abstraction as relates to a programmer.
Abstraction? Compartmentalizing concerns.
Okay.
Into a concrete and manipulative, an easy to manipulate
thing.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's pretty reasonable, and I'm certainly not going to like beat on it too hard. Okay. But here's their take. Okay.
That's your way of saying you're wrong.
No, you're not wrong. You know, sure. I mean, I think we could like, you know.
Yeah.
So here's their deal. Abstraction is naming things.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. You know, and that's great.
Sure.
You know, and if you
go that works better than mine in that, you know, int x becomes int age, right?
Like, yeah.
It's
taking, but it's still what you're saying, right? It's like you've got some pile of stuff, and then you give it a name.
Yeah, but it works up and down the hierarchy, and I appreciate that. It's better. It's certainly a better definition. Yeah.
So it's very good in that kind of way. It's not that it's, you know, and you think about it, you try to go through and you're like, oh, do I believe this? And it's like, well, actually, that's pretty good.
Right.
Okay. So that's the book. Anyway. So, but the point is, so let's say you wanted to do this book in understudy. Okay. So you'd sign up for this course. All right. And then we would, and then what you'd do is you would work through this book by yourself, during the week. Okay. And then like on the weekend, you would talk to somebody who is slightly more advanced than you in the same course, okay, that who we hooked you up with. And you basically tell them what you did. You're like, this is – you try to explain to them the section that you did that week, all right? Mm-hmm. And then as – so this is how you do it. So you just go and you're talking to this person. It's a lot like – do you play instruments?
I did years ago.
Okay, cool. So yeah. – So like, it's basically like private music lessons. It's almost identical, right? Yeah. You practice and then you go talk to your teacher.
Sure.
And then as you go a little bit in, so where'd this teacher come from? Well, as you go in a little bit, then we'll also hook you up with someone who's a little bit behind. And the idea is, so you get to converse, right? And you understand, you understand when you work with the person who's a little bit ahead of you, and you also understand when you work with the person who's behind you, because you're explaining yourself, and explaining yourself is really powerful, you know, forcing function for
for improvement. This is one of the things I miss most about, you know, getting up in the morning, brushing my teeth, and actually going to accompany the work.
The interplay is
completely invaluable. And yeah, to be perfectly honest, this show is a little bit of me doing that, right? It's like I get to be a dummy and I get to learn from whoever I talk to.
I think that's one of the sources of this. So I do play the cello. So certainly private, and like if you do that, like private lessons versus orchestra, there's like no comparison. Sure. But another source is, like I said, like before I got to Apple, I was like beating my head against, you know, doing Mac programming for basically 2 years before I got to speak in person, to before I got to start going to lunch with people who like cared about this stuff and who wanted to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And that conversation was, that was just like the best thing. And now that I've left Apple, it's got to be what I miss the most. You know, you keep talking about these people who are like, oh, they're a smart person. They're a smart person, right? Like,
right. But the fact that you don't get to like, you know, chew the fat with them every day.
Exactly. Right.
So even if it's about like, hey, the Lost finale sucked. Like whatever it is, it's like you're still interoperating with
it is, but you know what? A lot of the time at lunch, we'd still talk. You know, and be like, "Well, what are you doing?" You know, like you'd actually talk about stuff, and it was meaningful. So, and then the other aspect of that I think it comes from is like again, like working with Bridger. So I was working on Auto Layout. Basically, I mean, I'm trying to figure out how to put this. I'm not the only person who wrote Auto Layout, but I was the only full time person working on it, like for most of its development.
Right.
Okay. So like.
Yeah, it's your baby as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even Ali thought of it. I'm putting it in scare quotes, okay? Mm-hmm. Like a long time ago, Ali was actually on stage, like in, if anybody can find this video, I couldn't come up with it, but somewhere between like the next acquisition and the year like 2001, Ali like promises Auto Layout is like forthcoming on stage.
In public?
Yeah, at WRC. Really? Yeah. Okay, huh. And I couldn't find this thing. And of course, Auto Layout didn't mean the same thing then as it does now.
Sure. Yeah.
But
okay, Debug Nation, go find that clip. Just get on
please.
That.
Yeah. I really wanted that. I didn't completely fashion it from scratch. I was like after doing NS Image, I was like, Ali, I think I want to work on this next release. And the one, and it was funny because people had like started and stopped on it a couple times. And the one condition was, okay, you can do this if you promise to actually do it.
Sure. So was it your idea to use the solver, the different
the constraints? The constraint. So I actually spent like a month going through and trying to figure out like what were the important problems that needed solving, like what's wrong in our system, and then how do other systems work and what's wrong with those systems, and trying to come up with because like one thing was I wanted to have a reason like why, like lots of people have tried to do layout, right? And like there should be if you're going to do another one, like why do you think you're going to do, why is yours going to work when others didn't, you know? Like you should have an answer to that.
And the mathematically algorithmically correct constraint solver is, that's feels like the right thing to do.
You
did it, I'm like, oh, that makes sense, right? Like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess the I think the chain is first to realize, at least to me, that relationships really are what you want, are that what Interface Builder has been doing for you, the way you've been dragging things around, is exactly what you want to do.
Right.
That's actually quite natural. And then you just have to say, okay, well, what does it mean to capture that? What is that in code? And that's a constraint.
Yeah, but I like that leap where it's like, well, this is a relationship. Oh,
yeah,
that's a mathematical relationship.
Yeah.
Therefore, we can.
This is
we have a solver. We can find a yeah.
Yeah, and that was also coming from, I was looking at paper when I said looking at the layout systems, that includes from academia and this. Yeah. And I didn't write this algorithm from scratch.
It's based off of the library, right? That you
It's not. It's more based off the paper than the library.
Okay.
But they gave it a great name, Casper, but which makes it hard to tell what the name actually refers to.
Yeah.
You know, does it refer to an algorithm? Does it refer to a?
That came up recently in a Marcel Wiener. Post about functional programming and key value bindings and
I read that.
Yeah, it's a good post.
Yeah, it was.
Off topic, but the way that It makes sense. Like, I don't want to bend anybody's mind, but the way, like, layout and sort of functional programming and that reactive kind of stuff can all – it has a common language or common basis in this kind of solver thing. I mean, I'm trying to describe it in a way that – like it's rough.
Well, so you know, I actually thought Marcel was reaching a little bit.
I think he's reaching a little too, but I can see the thinking behind it.
Yeah.
But Marcel, like, bless him, very smart guy. Reaching is good.
Like, reaching is good. You're right.
I'm absolutely fine with that. Yeah.
It's much better to. I think it's a better technique for coming up with good stuff to overreach and then have to come back.
I totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's not lightweight about it. It's not like he writes like – it's not a tweet about like, hey, what would you – blah, blah, blah. It's like he's like 3,000 words working through the idea. I don't necessarily subscribe to the idea, but I love that it's in the world and we can think about it. I don't know what to think about it, but I like that I can think about it, which is weird.
The reason I was talking about developing the model layout again though was so – so for a lot of it, I really was just working by myself, and it was, and well, again, it's a little bit weird. It's not like other people weren't involved, but nobody else was in the code with me. You know, I was, and then Bridger came on, as an intern, and it was just like it was just like night and day. Like having somebody else who like if I did a bunch of work like at night and stayed up late, having somebody else who like in the morning could see that I did a bunch of work and was just like, hey, that's great, that's done now, you know, like that was huge. And so it gave me this funny, you know how I talk about like Apple having really small teams, right? I've got this. I think it's really interesting because you get more than about three people. I think you start to get some fairly significant costs to like communication costs, kind of like getting everybody on the same page. But going from one to two is like a more than 2x increase, I think, in like power you can bring to bear because you like bounce off each other, kind of like it's just way easier to stay in it. Anyway, so that's basically the deal with understudy. That like, if you want to read SICKP, like, well, SICKP is this big thing, and it's just really hard to just blast through this thing over however long it takes. And if you've got somebody else who you're talking, like, it, what it gives you is conversation. Like, if you can go and talk to somebody else about what's going on, and they like somebody else is invested, somebody else cares. Like, that's for me, that's just huge. Right. And so that's the reason to do this.
Yeah. I mean, a big part of shipping. I mean, like my product, Napkin, with not to turn it into an ad, but it would never have happened until I teamed up with Chris Parrish.
Yeah.
Because there's a depth there. Like when you're working with somebody and they're looking at the stuff, and like there is a – the snowball effect is a real thing. And just working in isolation is it works for some people, but you know,
some people can manage. Yeah, but it's not even like, you know, and it's not even just the additional like firepower of the other person. It's like like, you know how like people talk about like rubber duck debugging, where you explain to the duck on your monitor, and somehow trying to explain it solves your problems.
Yes,
like it's like a really advanced duck, right?
Yes, yes, exactly. So Chris Parrish does absolutely nothing.
It's all guy.
Chris Parrish is a rubber duck.
Is a duck. Yeah. Okay. I hope he puts that on his Twitter bio.
Yeah, he's cute, but you know, so totally useless. Chris, I'm so sorry. Thank you for all the work you do. Yeah. So understudy came about because this sort of interpersonal communication was important to you.
Yeah. Learning is huge, right? Like I said, I really want to make the world better. Okay. Like I know it's kind of a dumb thing to just like say, but it is also
it's dumb, but it's noble. I mean,
I want to do it. Okay.
Like pretty much everybody should be saying that ideally.
You know, okay. If people can do whatever they want to do, you know, there's merit in doing lots of different things, and not everybody has to go out and change the world. But nevertheless, you know, I'd like to make it better.
You know what? Do not make the world worse. And if you do, you don't just stop listening to this podcast. I don't want you Go away.
Enter the universe in a good way, not in a way that wrecks the body work.
Yeah.
Right. Dr. Doom, fuck off. Just go away.
Yeah. So I want to make the world better. And I think that, and I guess I feel like this is the reason why this is worth doing to me is that, you know, it's the thing is like, okay, so it's, if it works, I actually really hope it, I think it might work really, really well. Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll have to see. But the, you know, there's a certain amount of academic research on this. Like there's something called Bloom's two sigma problem, mm-hmm. which is a famous paper, which basically showed that if you take some people and you teach half the group through one-to-one techniques and half the group through traditional like books and lectures and stuff, then take the average person, the median person from the one-to-one group and compare them to the other group, they're performing at the 98th percentile.
Hmm.
Okay. So like the, and that's just the one-to-one, and we're doing that. And then we're also doing this other thing where you then explain to other people, right. which, you know, is also quite powerful as I think, you know,
what's funny is that this is, at least I don't know if it still is, but it was standard in Asia for a long time. You'd have a mentor who would teach you, and then it would be your job to teach the people who were junior than you. And even the German trade school system in Quebec, we have a trade school system. It all works that way.
Yeah. Right. We've fallen away from it. And the actually, you were mentioning, I remember, Renee, when I was talking to you at Singleton, you said there's a martial art where everybody you refer to as Sifu something?
Well, that's in Chinese culture. It's not just martial arts. Like my friend, he had one of those for chess. He had one of those for teaching auto repair. So basically the person who you learn from is your teacher father. The people who started before you are your teacher elder brothers and sisters. And what starts after you are your teacher younger brothers and sisters. And you have teacher uncles. And everyone is a teacher. It's just a different part of the hierarchy.
Yeah. So, and that's very much – and I thought that was super interesting when you said the – That's how we're thinking of it too, right? Like every single – we don't say everyone's a teacher. We say everyone's a student. But the everyone's a student and you're learning from the people who are ahead of you, and you're also learning from the people who are behind you when you try to explain. And just – you know, it's just conversation. So the goal here is, you know, basically improve how well everybody learns by like 3 standard deviations or something like that. So bring everybody up to the current 99th percentile. Which is, you know, not very likely, but it's worth working on to me. So there's, you know, and so basically you've got that, and then it's cheap. The financial model for this is, it's like a gym. So mm-hmm. it's like $5 a month, basically. Though you can, if you're using it for less than 2 hours a month, then it's free. So you can kind of try it out. But, you know, after that, it's $5 a month. And I think we can afford to make it that cheap. So if it's cheap and it's scalable, if it's cheap like these online courses, which aren't effective, right. is the problem there. Everybody drops out. It's scalable like college, you know, everybody can do it. And then and it's effective like private tutoring or like private lessons, then that's, you know, if all those things actually turn out to be true, then hopefully it's a pretty big deal. So
I think so. I think it's a good idea.
Sorry for getting a little moon-eyed or something. I don't know.
You need to be passionate about what you do.
Yeah. Don't apologize for that. I think everything I've learned, like really actually learned and internalized, has been because I've needed to communicate it to somebody else, which means I need to know what the hell I'm talking about in order to communicate it well to somebody else. I think this app I'm to study sort of cements that. I feel like that's at the heart.
Let's try it.
Of what you want. I am a horrible student. No, I never did well at school. You know, my homework was like,
likewise.
It was awful. I would never do it.
We have a couple of people doing this right now in beta testing. They dropped out of college, but they seem to be doing great with understudy. So
yeah, I basically. Yes, I also dropped out of college.
Same here.
It's so common. Are you really? Wow. I see that so much in the.
On paper, I'm an idiot. No, really.
You're clearly not an idiot. But it's really interesting to me how prevalent that is in like the circles I move in. I can't tell like what circles those are exactly, but I swear like everybody dropped out of college.
Yeah. I mean, well, our field has a bit of that because I think like a lot of the first wave just dropped out and founded Silicon Valley in a lot of ways, you know, so there wasn't so much of a thing.
Also, our schools were way – I don't know how it was in, in the States, but our schools were so far behind when it came to anything computers or digital for so long.
Oh yeah, you just couldn't learn it there. Yeah, and I was studying history and anthropology, which does not, which doesn't teach you how to type. I'll tell you that much.
No, but it does teach you how to communicate, which is pretty.
Yeah, cool. Which it's. I think that's a skill.
I think I think it's
worthwhile having. Yeah, without
no, well, and even I mean. Straight. Yeah. The thing is, like, you know, even I feel like unless you are absolutely living in your own little bubble, like you have to, like you just, you know, having a good idea to me at this point, I feel like is worthless. If you're like, if you can't explain it to anybody else, then like who even freaking cares, right?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Yeah. No, ideas are, I don't want to say ideas are worthless, but I'm going to say ideas are worthless.
Well, it's, I'm not even sure it counts as an idea if you can't articulate it. Like if you can't make it understood.
I totally agree. It becomes a straitjacket for your mind. If you can't articulate an idea and share it with people, then all you're doing is wrapping yourself up in this weird sort of Ouroboros self-eating thing where you're like, no, I know exactly. This is going to change the world. And it's like, if you can't tell people how and why and what to do,
right?
It doesn't exist.
I question if you even understand what it is. If you
exactly,
you know, and I'm not saying it has to be necessarily verbal. Yeah. Like it doesn't have to be that you have to put it into words necessarily. Nope. Like there are a lot of things that can't be communicated that way, but you have to communicate.
I forget who said it on the show. Maybe you remember, guy. But it was I have a great idea for a book. Just go write it for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
so
Star Wars 7. Let's go.
There was one other thing. What did you say that was interesting?
Me?
Probably. Sorry, I'm not sure. It was one of you two. lecture. You know, you were saying, Renee, the other aspect of lecture, you know, like how that's taken, why that's like the way things are done, you know? Like, Guy, please correct me on this because I don't know what I'm talking about right now, okay? And you're the anthropologist, apparently.
Well, apparently. Yeah.
Thing about lectures, it's information transfer, right? Yeah. And if books are really, really precious to you, if people don't have access to information in other ways, then I can see why lecture makes sense as how you want to spend your class time.
Yeah, it's an oral history.
Yeah, but like these, but now, I mean, books are cheap and they've been cheap for a long time. And I mean, you know, they're accessible and the internet is even cheaper. And the idea that lecture—I'm just not sure that lecture fills the niche that it once filled.
It was a scalability thing. They could easily put 300 kids in one teacher.
Yeah, and now
I think lecture served a role for, you know, let's say 100, 200 years. I think now we need to sort of redefine that role.
Yeah, but I feel like the role they serve is information transfer, and we may have other ways of doing that.
I totally agree, 100%. What I disagree with is the idea that lecture, meaning one person stands in front of a group and speaks. I think there is still value in that. I think maybe the content needs to be changed up a little bit, or the format, maybe it's just a Q&A. I don't know, but.
I don't think it's worth. I would agree that it's not worthless at all. I think there's lots of things it's good for, but it's not the way that I would want to learn a class.
So I agree, but I know for a fact that I have been inspired by teachers who have labored under that system where they lecture you, and what they say has literally inspired me to go and study and to do work and to learn about things that I probably would not have done. Because I'm a lazy nerdy guy, but now I know way more about the Sioux Native Americans than I ever would have because of this guy's passion.
So and they can, but it's so much harder. Like for every kid you manage to inspire, there's going to be three who just fall asleep. You know, like it just the level of skill that's required to do that. Like you know, that's what I'm saying. Like it's not.
Oh, it's a highly skilled thing. That's what.
Yeah,
like
it's not a
major problem with the idea that teachers are just minimum wage people. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
So, but it's not that lecture is completely useless, but if you know, like I said, in this study, but if you look, you know what else inspires you is talking to, is like, you know, talking to somebody one-on-one, right? So like, it's not a matter of one of them works and one of them doesn't, but there is a matter of which works more reliably.
Well, and you know what, I will totally give you that, is that the best teachers, the best speakers, I feel like they're talking to me.
Yeah.
And
which is hard. That's difficult.
Right. Yeah, no, so. it's an incredibly hard skill. And I have a huge, even at the time when I'm a dumbass teenager, I'm like, you're doing just a great job.
Yeah.
Because I've seen a bunch of teachers and you're killing it. Like, you're clearly.
Yeah. But I also had my second semester physics professor in college who, he was a caricature. I mean, he was so boring. I mean, he faced the blackboard all the time and just didn't turn around and had this amazing monotone. It was crazy. Like, it was like laugh out loud funny.
And right. Bueller.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not defending teachers as an entirety. I'm defending the idea that a teacher can change your life.
They absolutely can. Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to. I think that you're embracing that. And trying to figure out
I am. Though you're right that like somebody could reason. So one thing, another way to think of what we're doing is that we are actually deprofessionalizing teaching to some degree, because everybody's teaching everybody else. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, you could certainly see people saying that that implies a disrespect for the profession of teaching, which I don't think it does. But
no, I don't. I disagree with that. I'll. So.
Yeah. Anyway.
Bullshit.
All right.
If anything, it's sort of doubling down on what teaching should be. I mean, teaching is not having a ruler and wrapping people's knuckles and like trying to keep a class of 30 to 50 or these days, God knows how many, in line. That's not teaching. That's
custodial work.
Yeah, right. I mean, all of that is growing up around the institution of schools. Teaching is something very different. Teaching is what you do. It's a like a master-apprentice kind of relationship.
Yeah, right. Which is another. You know, that's also how graduate school works, right? Which very explicitly, you have your advisor, and you go off and do some work, and then you bring it back, and you talk to your advisor about it, and that's. Yeah.
And to be honest, that's how work. Works.
That's true. That's how work works.
When you join the workforce, at the top of the show, you were saying that you were stupid and incompetent. Not in so many words. And I'm taking liberties to, you know, crack a joke with people. But you were saying that you felt like you were undeserving of the position. And I think that that's how pretty much everybody feels when they take a job. That they're going to actually do well in is that they're underqualified to do well at it. They recognize that, they strive and they learn. And I think that it's a teaching environment like no other, right?
It is.
Like basically, I'm going to throw you in the deep end and, you know, get your shit together.
So an understudy is actually, you know, it's also, like I said, it's partially modeled on that. And it was also something actually that I don't like as much about the Cocoa Group, the way it works, is that I think it actually is a little bit, like I said, I was working on Auto Layout by myself for a really long time. Like there was half a year where there was no week in which I did not end up staying at the office sleeping under my desk at least one night.
Well, wait, not to interrupt you, but maybe do you think if you'd taken a shower, people would hang out with you?
I was still showering, but Apple has showered.
Okay, that's good to know.
I'm actually quite embarrassed by that. And I should say that the other aspect of that is I'm actually quite slow. Speed is not one of my strengths as a programmer. And I think there's a lot of that shouldn't have been needed. But for me, in trying to figure out like what could have made this better for me, like I said, it was like, even if we had had this, like my girlfriend's lab, she's a scientist. Her lab has a thing called, learn one, do one, teach one, which works very similarly. On every given project, you're working on a couple projects at a time and you have one of these different roles. Mm-hmm. And first you do a project where you're learning something, then you do sort of another project in that vein where you're doing it, and then you do one where you're teaching it. And and so they're always cycling around, and it's not really it's not hierarchical, but a role-based relationship, you know, where different people, you know, and that was like how it, you know, that I wish the Cocoa Group worked a little bit more like that, actually, because it's a little too like like if Aki Inoue is doing text layout, right. You know, I don't really know what he's doing. So other than text layout. So
again, not a dummy, little bit of knowing what he's doing. If you
it
have,
is funny
if
in
you
the
have
app
some
it,
weird UI, like UI, Unicode symbol, Aki can tell you exactly what it'll compose with without even breaking a sweat.
I do think it's really fun in the AppKit release notes, though. If the viewers don't know, by the way, the AppKit release notes are really cool. They're really fun.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah.
But they're actually written by the engineers, and you can
tell,
especially especially when it goes from Aki, who's from Japan, straight into Mark Picciarelli, who has rather substantial command of the English language to the degree that once in a while you have to ask him to use a little bit less sophisticated vocabulary. I remember there was some API where he used a word in a comment and Corbin's just kind of like, what's that mean?
So literate. It's just,
yeah. So when the AppKit release notes, like go from Kareen from Aki into Mark, it's pretty funny.
Those are great, by the way. Release notes in general are, I believe, written by the teams. Like,
yeah, though I don't think too many other groups do them the way AppKit.
Well, Foundation and AppKit, I think.
Foundation and AppKit, yeah. But that's all the same group, really.
Right. They are gold. I mean, first, step one, when you get a seed, just read those.
Yeah.
Like, you'll actually...
Yeah,
it's like getting a one-on-one lecture. There you go.
Right. And the docs guy. And then the other issue is that ever since the phone came out, the docs guys have just been swamped. So unfortunately, sometimes that material takes a long time to get into more canonical sources. So
description forthcoming.
See,
that's the old joke.
I post-date that. I recognize that reference, but I don't. But I never saw it myself.
Yeah.
So you were earlier than me.
If Scott Anglish is working.
Good job, dude.
But I appreciate the difficulty. I mean, there's two OSs, and it's not like they grow that group very often. So.
Well, I definitely think engineering has grown faster than the docs group.
So. Yeah, but they're doing a great job. It's way better now than it used to be.
Yeah, they do a good job. I really liked. Malcolm Crawford did the docs for model layout, and that was pretty fun.
Yep. Again, so. Not a dummy. There's no dummies. Anyway, so you're a dummy. Where can we find you on the great web?
My Twitter, I guess, is Kong Tomorrow, KongTomorrow. The app is understudyapp.com. That's probably about what you want to do. I have a web page, but it's boring. So,
what's on your webpage?
This big red robot that I drew, and some photographs.
I was looking at it today. It was non-helpful for preparing for the show.
Yeah, and some old code from before I worked at Apple. So,
well, that could be fun just to make fun of you for.
Yeah, you could. I think it's still up there. You can see how good you think it is. I was going to say.
Buy my app. I'll say for your buy his app.
Yeah, whatever.
Everybody go buy Understudy, teach each other.
Oh, yeah. So we already talked about Sigma. So we're launching with two things. If you wanna get better at programming, that's the main thing. We're also doing this book, Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain, which will basically teach you to draw, and it's pretty amazing. Do you know this book, guys?
A little bit, yeah. Okay. I was talking to Neil about it.
Who were you? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, what did he have to say?
He liked it.
that's it, huh?
No, he thought it was cool. He thought it was interesting.
So I think it's amazing, is what I think it is. So the deal with it, it's very much like Sigfi. Like, the deal with this book is, you know, it says that anybody, all adults can draw. Like, drawing is a skill that is like reading and writing, both in the extent that anybody with normal capabilities should be able to do it, and also that anybody with normal capabilities really should do it. Sure. You know, like when we were talking about communication, like, this is part of that. Like, you should learn how to think like this. It's a different mode.
When I was young, younger, because I'm still young at the age of 96, I wanted to either be a comic book artist or a programmer for video games.
I'm super interested in your video game work, by the way. I think that's really
well. Turns out one of them makes you more money. But no, and
I, which one,
and
guy?
Exactly. I regret sort of not following through on my my drawing, and because it is incredibly relaxing. Yeah. It's a total different part of the brain. Like it.
So that's
both of them have this weird. I don't know how to describe it. If I was a neuroscientist, I would. But both of them divorce you from any kind of concerns you have in your daily life and immerse you in this new thing that you're doing. In the case of drawing, it's you're working on the image that you're visualizing, and in the case of code, you're completely invested in trying to remember the entire structure of the program, the app, the method, the whatever.
Building this world.
Right. Yeah. But I think that it's similarly their escapism, ultimately, at the base level.
All right.
Well, I was going to say one of the reasons I didn't do well in school and I could draw Batman inside understudy is because I used to spend 4, 5, 6, 7 hours a night just drawing comic books in lieu of doing homework or anything else.
Uh-huh.
You're a good man, Renee.
Priorities.
Okay, this does explain why you – I mean, that was pretty much the best – like – so I should say like you the app is supposed to be used to do drawing, but you don't draw in the app. You draw on paper and then you talk about it in the app. You can drop in a photo and scribble on it. But Renee actually drew in the app and I was pretty impressed.
So. Misspent youth.
Yeah. No, but it's really good. I mean, yeah. Anyway, I actually need to talk about that because I accidentally deleted that document. I'd like to.
I'll send you a screenshot.
So, yeah.
So if you want to be Batman, the best thing you can do right now is go out and buy understudy.
Yes. Thanks, guy.
That's all it. Right. Bruce Wayne, on the line, he's calling up. He's saying, you know what? Buy understudy.
Also be a billionaire.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, understudy is cheap enough. You don't have to be. Anyone could be Batman.
Exactly. Anybody can be Batman.
Nice. All right.